All right, beginning on the top of Mem Vav Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. The Perek now begins a new series of issues, which are the dinim of Bechor Adam. Now, Bechor Adam is really divided up into two different categories. There's what's called Bechor the Kohen and Bechor the Nachala. They are two separate parshiot. They really have nothing to do with each other, and all their requirements are different. It happens to be that sometimes they overlap, and the same individual will both be a Bechor the Kohen and Bechor the Nachala. But that's not necessarily true, or it's not a necessity either. They can be totally separate, or you can have someone who's a Bechor the Nachala and not a Bechor the Kohen, and vice versa. Bechor the Kohen and not Bechor the Nachala. The Mishnah is going to discuss all those different permutations. As we've seen already, with regards to Bechor the Kohen, the determining factor is Peter Rechem. Peter Rechem is the first that exits the mother's womb. That's the one that's going to be designated as the Bechor the Kohen. So there are two factors here. One of which is it's determined by the mother, not the father. And number two is it's determined by Peter Rechem. That's a key element or the key elements that are associated with Bechor the Kohen. Then you have Bechor the Nachala. Bechor the Nachala is a parshia that's found in Parshat Ki Teitze. That says, Ki hu reshito no, lo mishpata bechora. Because he's the first of the strength of the father, therefore he's entitled to the double portion that is associated with the bechor, or otherwise known as bechor lenachala. Over there, the Torah describes it as being yakir lo, that he has to recognize him, and oh no, it's the first of his strength, and the Gemara dashes from there the word onain or oven, which refers to having feelings or emotions with regards to this fetus. And therefore, with regards to Bechor LeNachala, it's number one determined by the father, not by the mother, because it's Roshit Ono. Number two is, it has to be something Shedavali Bo Acharav, that his heart is drawn after it. So it has to be an entity which the father feels connected to, that feels a sense of emotion with. And we'll see in the Gemara that there are definitions of when that is true, but the assumption being that if it is a miscarriage or something that the father is not attached to, that would not be a Bechor the Nachala. So again, the key elements with Bechor the Nachala is, first of all, determined by the father. And number two is, it's got to be Reshit Ono, something where the father is drawn after the fetus, drawn after the baby that is born. So you can obviously see why you might not have overlap between the two. Or you could sometimes have a coincidence of these two items, and therefore you'll have somebody who's both the Bechor the Nachala and Bechor the Kohen. And that's what the Mishnah lays out over here. Yesh Bechor the Nachala, Vein Bechor the Kohen. Sometimes you have a baby that is born that is a Bechor the Nachala, but it's not a Bechor the Kohen. And vice versa, Bechor the Kohen, Vein Bechor the Nachala. And sometimes you have somebody that is a Bechor the Kohen, but not a Bechor the Nachala. And then you do have Bechor the Nachala the Kohen. Sometimes the two intersect, and you have both a Bechor the Nachala and the Kohen. And sometimes you have a baby that's born that seemingly is the firstborn, but he's neither the Bechor the Nachala, nor is he the Bechor the Kohen. And then the Mishnah is going to describe the scenarios in which we have these different permutations, first of which is, Ezu Bechor the Nachala, Veinu Bechor the Kohen. Which is the case in which he is a Bechor the Nachala and not a Bechor the Kohen? Now, the easiest scenario is actually brought later on in the Mishnah, which the Mishnah will get to, which is in an instance where the mother has already had children and the father has yet to have children. So it's the father's first child, but it's not the mother's first child. And that's the situation. That's the easiest scenario in which you have a Bechor the Nachala and not a Bechor the Kohen. Again, the Mishnah will get to that, but in the interim, it's going to go through some of the more complex cases, which is Haba Achar Nefelim. That's someone who comes after a Nefel, after a miscarriage. Afo Pi Shiatza Et Rosho Chai. Even if his head was alive when it came out. And then Ben Tisha Yatza Rosho Mei. Or a case where it's a full-term baby that had its head come out, even if it was not alive at the time. So from the context of the Mishnah, you see that the definition of Nefelim in the Mishnah is different than we normally would assume by a Nefel. When we speak about a Nefel, a miscarriage, Nefel here means something that has not reached full term, something that has not reached full 9 months, because that's the next case. The next case is Ben Tisha. When it reached full term, that's a description in the next line of the Mishnah. That means what came beforehand in the Nefelim is a baby or a fetus that did not reach full term. So that's first of all. Number two is Rashi explains the case here. He's obviously influenced by the questions that we find in the Gemara. But Rashi explains the case here as dealing with te'umim, that we're dealing with twins. The difficulty, obviously, in dealing with twins is that the scenario that Rashi describes is somewhat difficult to come about in reality. But nevertheless, in their day, they had a view, and the Rishonim, Bali HaTosafot, questioned Rashi in some instances about this, but that you can have twins that are actually of two different terms. That's what Rashi says, Sheyatzar Rosho Shel Nefel Chai, that this fetus stuck its head out, Chai, Kegon Shayu Te'omim. There were two babies, twins, inside of this mother, Echad Nefel, Vechad Kalulo Chadoshav. One of them was already at full term, and the other one was a Nefel, which again, the definition of Nefel means it's not at full term. So that's obviously a physical improbability, or maybe even impossibility to have something like this, a scenario like this. But again, we'll use it because that's the way Rashi describes it. Obviously, you can come up with a scenario that's different that will maybe incorporate the conditions that the Gemara is laying out, the Mishnah is laying out according to Rashi. So you have these twins, one of which is at full term, the other one which has not reached full term. The one that has not reached full term sticks its head out. Then it goes back in. It pulls its head back in. And then the baby that was full term comes out at that point. So now, in terms of Bechor Lenachala, the first one that came out didn't change anything. Because even though it stuck its head out, it was not a full-fledged Leida. Because by Nachala, you need Reshito No, which is that the Leva Viv Dava Alav. And this Nefel, in the end, dies and comes out. Therefore, the father has no connection to this Nefel. Since he has no connection to the Nefel, as far as Nachala is concerned, the head coming out of this Nefel, even though it was alive at the time that it came out, has no impact in terms of Nachala. On the other hand, for the condition of Peter Rechem, the head coming out alive is sufficient to be considered a Leida. So as far as Bechor is concerned, the head coming out alive, even of this Nefel, even of this baby that has not reached full term, that's a sufficient Leida to be called Peter Rechem, and therefore there's no longer a din of Bechor Kohen when the other child comes out, the one that's Kalu Chadashav, the one that's at full term, that exits fully before the Nefel, he's not a Bechor Kohen. On the other hand, because of the fact that this Nefel pulled back its head and then did not come out as a viable entity, then the first viable entity to exit was the baby that reached full term. And therefore, he's going to be a Bechor Lenachala, but not a Bechor LeKohen. So that's the first scenario. Again, we'll get into more detail of this in the Gemara, but it's clear here that it's a case of twins. It's a case where the Nefel brought its head out first, then pulled it back, and then the other full-term baby exited from the mother. Now, in terms of Ben Tisha, when we're talking about a full-term baby, Sheyatzar Rosho Meit, even if it came out dead, that's already a Bechor LeKohen. In terms of Bechor LeNachala, the first one that came out doesn't have any bearing here. Meaning the baby that comes out and its head is mate, there clearly the father has no connection or emotional connection to this baby, and therefore there's no din of Bechor LeNachala over here. As far as Bechor LeKohen, anything that reaches full term is already considered a birth once the head exits. So at full term, the head exiting is sufficient to be deemed a birth, and that is whether it's alive or whether it is dead. And as opposed to the Nefel, the baby that is not at full term, there only if it's chai, only if it's alive when the head exits, does it have a din of Peter Rechem. If it is coming out and it's dead, then that would not have a din of birth, because we only say that the head is deemed birth when you're dealing with either a live entity with a baby that has not reached full term, or a baby who's reached full term, then the head coming out by definition is a birth. And so for that reason, here again, the baby whose head came out will deem it the Bechor LeKohen, meaning that there's going to be no Bechor LeKohen. And then the second child that comes out, really who's the first one to exit fully from the mother, he will be a Bechor LeNachala. So these again are two examples of cases where you have a Bechor LeNachala, not a Bechor LeKohen. Then, Hamapelet, Kamin Beima, Chaya Ba'of. This is really related to a Mishnah in Nida, which we'll spend a lot more time on, which is that if the mother miscarries different shapes or different entities that come out of her, whether they're deemed to be a birth or they're not deemed to be a birth. According to Rabbi Meir, he has a broader definition of what's considered to be a birth. And that means that even if the shape of the item that was discharged by the mother was a beima, chaya, or oaf, any one of those three items, it has a shape like that, the Gemara Nida will discuss exactly what features, what aspects, how much needs to be of each of these items. According to Rabbi Meir, that's deemed to be a birth. Whereas the Chachamim Marim, Adshei Bo Mitzurat Adam, until it has a shape of a human being. So the Chachamim have a higher threshold or standard for what's considered to be a birth over here, that it has to have Tzurat Adam. Basically, there's a correlation which the Rambam makes in the Perush of Mishnayot, but it's obvious based on the Mishnah and Nida as well, which is that anything that's deemed to be a Leida, for Dine Leida, which means that you bring a Korban, that you have Yumei Tuma, Yumei Tahara, so anything that has that standard based on the threshold that we set, then if it's considered a Leida for that, then it's considered to be a Leida also for Peter Rechem. And that's the correlation between them. Rabbi Meir will say that if you're Mapelet, Behema Chayav Oph, which is the context of the Mishnah in Nida, then that's considered to be a Leida to the point that you need to bring a Korban Leida. You have Dine Tumat Leida and Tara Dam Tumea, Dam Tahora Shela Leida, where the Chamim say that's not the case. And Chamim require to have Surat Adam in order to be a Leida or have a Korban Leida. And therefore, the same way that the Korban Leida is determined by this, so too is it determined for the Bechor LeKohen. A mapelet, sandal, or a woman who gives birth to a something that's the shape of a sandal, which is a piece of flesh that comes out that doesn't have necessarily the features that you would have expected. And Tosfot says, the chiddush over here is that even though the Gemara Nida says you never have a sandal, believe vlad, so that means by definition there's a vlad over here. In our scenario where we're speaking about twins, there for sure is a vlad. So the chiddush can't really be that the next baby that's born is not considered to be a Bechor the Kohen, because that's obvious. You have a vlad here no matter what. Although the chiddush is that if that sandal exited first, the twin that's with it is considered to be a Ba'achar, a sandal after another vlad, and that second child that is born in the same pregnancy and that is a twin will not be classified as the Bechor the Kohen because the sandal exited first. And we don't consider this vlad to be the vlad that's associated with the sandal, but we rather view the sandal as being an independent vlad or a vlad associated with it, and the fetus that comes out with it, the twin that comes out with it, is a separate vlad, and therefore it's not a Bechor the Kohen. O shilya, o shfir mirukam. Or a discharge of whether it's the placenta or the fetal sac. O shfir mirukam. Or you have a sac of some sort that has certain shape to it, which is enough shape that it's determined to be a being. Vayotze mechutach. And a fetus that was taken out in pieces. Habach areihem. Any birth that comes after one of these items is a bechor lenachla v'ein bechor lekohen. Clearly, none of these are Bechor LeNachla because none of them are viable entities. And so therefore, the next child to be born will be the Bechor LeNachla. As far as Peter Rechem is concerned, if it's deemed a Leida, then it's no longer Peter Rechem, the child that comes afterwards. And then these items would have been the quote-unquote Bechor because they were the first to be Poter, the Rechem. And so in each of these cases, you have a birth that is classified as a Peter Rechem, but it's not a birth that is classified for Bechor LeNachla, and therefore the one that comes afterwards is considered to be the Bechor LeNachla, but not the Bechor LeKohen. Just one note about Mechutach, Rashi explains over here that Mechutach is that it's taken out piece by piece, and that whatever happened here, there was danger, there was a necessity to do surgery to take it out piece by piece. Rashi says that im rosho mechutach lo patar, im kadam achiv yatza kodem yitziat rov evarei hamechutach. Rashi over here says that you have to have the rov of the evarim exit the mother in order for it to be a birth of an entity that's been cut up. And that implies, and Rashi says it explicitly, that if the head came out alone, that would not be considered a birth. Even though we just saw before that the head coming out is a birth, over here that would not qualify. Tosafot just points out that that is milta de plukta de amorai. Rashi is making a statement that's not necessarily true according to everyone. It happens to be a machlok de amoraim in the Gemara Nida. The Rabbi Yochanan Savar hatam da filo mechutach harosh poter. Even if it comes out in pieces, if the head came out, that's enough to be classified as a birth. Given what we know before, that would have to be a baby that reached full term. In order for that to be true, it cannot be a nephel. But Rashi makes it sound like everybody agrees that if the head comes out b'mechutach, that's not considered to be enough of a birth. Whereas Tosafot points out that that is a machloket amoraim in the Gemara Nida. Right, the next scenario is mishelo ayula banim venasa isha shekvar yalda. So that's again the classic or easiest case to come up with where you have a Bechor LeNachla but not Bechor LeKohen, because he never had children before, so this is clearly his Bechor LeNachla, and he's marrying a woman who already gave birth to children before in a previous marriage or a previous scenario. And given that, she's not going to have a Bechor LeKohen. It's not a Peter Rechem in this instance. Oda Shivcha v'nishtachara. Oda uvedet kochavim v'nitgaira. If you have a woman who is a Shivcha Kanaanit, and then she is freed, or she was an Ovedet Kochavim, and then she converts. So Rashi over here explains that Afilu Oda Shivcha b'leida rishona v'nishtachara akshav. Cases that maybe she was a Shivcha Kanaanit during her first birth, and now this is her second birth, is after she's already been freed, or she was an Ovedet Kochavim, Mishabat Yisrael Yalda. And once she becomes a Yisraelite, she now has a birth. And the exact details of the case, as well as its connection to the statement before, Abshkvar Yalda, that will be discussed in tomorrow's daf as to what the scenario is exactly here in this case in the Mishnah. In terms of Bechor LeNachla, the assumption is that this is a firstborn to whichever the husband is, and therefore it's a Bechor LeNachla. But in terms of Bechor LeKohen, these women already had births before they became quote-unquote Jewish. Those births make it that this is not a Peter Rechem, and therefore it's a Bechor LeNachla, vein Bechor LeKohen. Although there is a dissenting opinion here, but because the Aglili Omer, Bechor LeNachla uLeKohen. It's not only a Bechor LeNachla because it's a firstborn for the husband, it's also a firstborn for the woman in Israel. Shenemar, Petach Rechem b'Israel. It has to be the firstborn in Israel. Ad she yifteru Rechem Israel. Until it is a Jewish Rechem that it was poter, that's the classification, the qualification for a Bechor LeKohen. So Rabbi Yosef and Aglili and the Chachamim argue about the definition of Peter Rechem b'Israel. Truth is, it's really a question about what is Israel modifying in the Peter Rechem. Is it the Rechem or is it the Peter that it's defining? So according to Rabbi Yosef Aglili, the Israel is modifying the Peter, meaning that the first birth as the Israelite, that's what's Mechayevet in Pidyon HaBen. That only happens post the time that she was freed if she was Shivcha Kananit, or post the time that she converted if she was a Gioret. And therefore he believes there would even be a Bechor LeKohen over here. As according to the Chachamim, the Israel is modifying the Rechem, which means that the first birth needs to be an Israelite birth in order for it to be deemed Sabdetz Chayav in Pidyon HaBen. Now the Mishnah begins to explain the cases where it is a Bechor LeKohen, but not a Bechor LeNachala. The first case is, Misha yulo banim v'nasa isha shelo yalada. If an individual had children already, and he marries a woman that has yet to give birth, nit gaira mi'uberet. If she converted while she was pregnant, Rashi over here adds the additional factor that he converted with her, the husband and the wife converted together, nishtachara mi'uberet, or the Shivcha Kananit was freed while she was pregnant. And again, here, it sounds like Rashi doesn't say it here, but maybe it would mean that also the Eved Kanani, that was her husband, also was freed at the same time. And then she gives birth. In that scenario, you have a situation in which the conception of the child happened while the woman was not Jewish. That's whether it's a case of a Gioret, where she was an Ovedet Kochavim, or a case of Shivcha Kananit, even though she is quasi-Jewish beforehand, as a Shivcha Kananit, still in terms of Yichus, and she has a din like a Goya, and therefore only after Nishtachara was she giving birth, but the conception happened at a time that she wasn't Jewish. In that scenario, the Vlad is a Bechor LeKohen, because it has a din of Peter Rechem b'Israel, because in terms of the child, this is the firstborn for this woman, and whether she's a Shivcha Kananit that was freed or a Gioret, in both cases, the birth took place. The Peter Rechem took place when she was already Jewish. And therefore, as far as a Kohen is concerned, it is a Bechor LeKohen. In terms of Bechor LeNachla, Rashi claims that the failure here was the fact that there was conception while she wasn't Jewish. And since there was conception while she wasn't Jewish, Rashi says here, Dehorato Shalobik Dusha, since the conception happened when she was not part of Klal Yisrael, V'lav Bar Nachalahu, and therefore there's no Nachala here, because Zere Mitzri Rachmana Afgare. Rashi quotes the Psukim from Yechezkel that discusses about a Mitzri. It's true in general about Chayis for non-Jews, that they don't have any din of Chayis in terms of the connection between the father and the child. And therefore, when they converted, the conception that took place when they were not Jewish, over there, there's no din of nachala, because there's no chayis for a goy. That's the way that Rashi explains it. Tosafot is bothered by that explanation of Rashi. He says, ubuchinam, perish tamzeh. This reasoning that Rashi is giving about the lack of chayis, or the lack of connection between a father and a child for a goy, that was unnecessary. Because even without that, he's not a bar nachla, mishom. Because of the principle of ger, shenit gayer, kikatan shenolad dami. A ger that converts is as if he is a newborn. Veinu chashuv aviv. And therefore, there's no relationship between the father and the son anymore after conversion. They're both now independent entities. They are separate. Va'af agav debodo mitzri. Even though when he's a mitzri, chashuv aviv gavei nachala. He is considered to be his father for nachala. V'lo amrinan rachman afkarei, lenyan zed lezarei. Over there, we don't say that. Da mitzri yorei shaviv dvar Torah. Because a non-Jew inherits his father, min ha-Torah. So, if they remained a goy, even though we say there's no chayis, legabei, a father to a child by goyim, that's not because they don't inherit each other. It's not because they don't have a father-son relationship. It does exist. The father-son relationship exists. There is nachla min ha-Torah, from a father to a son. But in terms of chayis, in terms of their status, the father has no bearing on the child. And therefore, once they convert, Rashi says that's the contributing factor to make it that they don't have any din of nachla over here. Tosfot says that's not the reason. The reason is because when you convert, it's kekatan shenolad dam. It's as if you hit a reset button and everything restarted from zero over there, and you have no relationship to each other. And that's why over here he thinks the reasoning is more driven by kekatan shenolad dam than the lack of chayis that Rashi mentions is the reason for the fact that there is no Bechor Benachla over here. Alright, the next scenarios, V'yalda. He v'kohenet, he v'livya, he v'isha shekvar yalda. You have two women. One woman has yet to give birth. This is her firstborn. With her, there's also a kohenet, who is Pturah from Bechor Kohen, as well as a livya, which again we've seen earlier. And an isha, a woman already gave birth. So in this scenario, they both give birth to male children, except they got mixed up. We don't know which child belongs to which of the women here. Given that, we now have a problem in terms of Bechor Lenachala, because we're never certain that any child is really the son or the one who is to inherit the father. So in each of those cases, the brothers or other brothers there can push away the child and say, you're not really our brother because you belong to the other woman. On the other hand, as far as Bechor Lekohen, in those scenarios, the father, Mimenov Shach, had a Bechor. We know that he had a Bechor because both of them gave birth to males, and his wife hadn't given birth yet. So we know that he owes money to the Kohen because he had a Bechor. We don't know which one is the Bechor, but we know that he did have a Bechor. That means that as long as the father is alive, then the father has to pay the Kohen and do Pidyon HaBen or Pidyon HaBechor. On the other hand, if the father passes away, the children themselves will not be Chayav in Bechor or Pidyon HaBen, because of the fact that you can't prove, Motzime Chavero Lavaraya, the Kohen can never prove which of the two children is the Bechor. So in this scenario, again, you have a Bechor the Kohen, but somebody that is not a Bechor the Nachala. V'chein, mi shelo sha'ata lachar bala shlosha chodoshim, v'niseit, a woman who didn't wait the requisite 3 months from the time that she got divorced, or the time that she was widowed, and she married another man, v'yalda, and then she gives birth. V'ni yaduayim ben tisha l'rishon, and we don't know if this is a baby that reached full term from the first husband, 9 months, in ben shiva l'acharon, or whether it's a 7 month baby from the second husband. In this case, it's a safek as to who the father is. This is based on the view of the Mishnah, the Gemara, that entities or babies are only viable at 9 months and 7 months. 8 month babies are not really viable. And therefore, the confusion is between a 9 month and a 7 month baby over here. And given that, we make her wait requisite 3 months to ensure that she is not pregnant before she marries. Here, she violated that waiting period and got married. And so now we don't know. We're uncertain as to whether the baby belongs to the first husband or the second husband. Then, it's a Bechor LeKohen, because as far as she's concerned, it's the firstborn of hers. Now, the fathers are not going to be chayav to pay here, because we don't know which father is really the party that's responsible. The son himself, once he becomes a gadol, will have to redeem himself, because he's for sure a Bechor LeKohen and requires Pidyon HaBen. But ain't no Bechor LeNachala, because each father can say it really belongs to the other father, and therefore he can't inherit, or the brothers can say he can't inherit because he's not born from this father. So these are all scenarios, situations in which it is a bechor le kohen, but it's eino bechor le nachala. All right, now the Gemara starts out with the statement of Shmuel, which is going to turn out to be very controversial because of our Mishnah, which is, Amar Shmuel, ein arosh poter b'nefelim. When you have a miscarried fetus, the head is not enough to deem it a birth. So Rashi over here says it's a case of ben shmona, shu'utzi rosho chai. It's a case where it's an 8-month baby, which is not a viable entity, that stuck its head out while it was alive, vech zero, and then he brought it back in. That doesn't mean dafka a ben shmona chai, as opposed to ben tisha, where even mate, it would be enough with the head. But rather, ben shmona chai means afagav de chai. You can see that in the Ben Gershom. Even though it's alive, since it's not a bar kayama, the head's not enough. And certainly, if I attend tisha mate, the head's also not going to be enough, according to Shmuel. Become the malachiv. And then the brother, the other twin in there, came out, v'yatza. So that baby that comes out will be a bechor the kohen, because the rosh of the nephil that came out is not considered to be a birth. And number two is he's going to be the Bechor Lenachala because he's the first viable entity to exit the mother. So that's what Shmuel says. And Shmuel's din, or in essence what Shmuel says, is that Rosh isn't enough. You can't have the head. You need Rosho Virubo. You need the head and the majority of the fetus to exit in order for it to be deemed a birth that would be a Peterechem. My daima. What's the reasoning of Shmuel's position? It says, Kol asher nishmat ruach chayim be'apav. Only things that have a life force in it. Kohecha de nishmat ruach chayim be'apav, hu dechashiv reshe. In a case where you have a live, viable entity, then in that situation, apav, the head is considered to be the birth. Idach, if it's not the case, lo chashiv reshe. Then its head is not considered to be the birth. So you have to read it as Kol asher nishmat ruach chayim, not as being anything that has a life force, but rather anything that is a viable entity, b'apav, then its face or its head is the deemed birth. On the other hand, if it is not a viable entity, meaning that it's a nefel, it's something that has low kalulo chadashav, has not reached its full term, then apav is not the factor that determines birth. So according to this, only a 9-month live, viable fetus that's carried to full term, then would the head be deemed as a birth? Whereas if it's less than 9 months, there would not be deemed a birth. When the head comes out, you need Rosho Virubo. Now the Gemara says, it's not our Mishnah. Haba achar nefelim, a entity that's born after nefelim, a miscarriage, Shetza Rosho Chai, where the baby or the fetus put out its head when it was live and then retracted it. So obviously, again, here, this is what precipitates Rashi's explanation in the Mishnah, because over here, the Gemara is clearly assuming that there are two entities over here, and that it was a nefel that came out with Rosho Chai, Uben Tisha Shiatso Rotso mate, or a full-term baby whose head came out when it's a mate, Dani Mia. You see from here, Rosho. As soon as the nefel puts its head out, it's deemed a birth for the Kohen. And you don't need Rosho Virubo. It goes against what Shmuel says over here. So Shmuel says, you're not understanding the Mishnah correctly. My Rosho is Rosho. Virubo. It doesn't really mean Rosho, it means Rosho Virubo. That's the meaning of Rosho over there. So it says, Velitnei Rubo. Why doesn't it write Rubo? If it means Rubo, that's a pretty essential factor that you need to mention. Why does it only mention Rosho? It should mention Rosho Virubo. It says, Vidinu, Deubaile, Limitnei Rubo. The Mishnah should have written Rubo. But because of the next line of the Mishnah where it can write Murubo, because it says Ben Tisha Shiatza Rosho Mate, Taima the Rosho Mate. There you would have inferred that Rosho Mate, Ha Rosho Chai, if its head came out alive, Haba Achara Bechor the Nachala Nami Lo Avi. Then even the one who comes after him will not be a Bechor the Nachala. So Tani Reisha Nami Rosho. So because in the next scenario, the word Rosho is Dafka, therefore in the scenario before it wrote Rosho, even though it's not Dafka and it's a Lav Dafka. In the scenario where it's a full-term baby and it's Rosho's mate, that's the scenario in a Mishnah where we say it's a Bechor the Kohen, but not a Bechor the Nachala. Implying, or the inference from that is if it came out alive, meaning the head came out alive at a full-term baby, that baby would have been both the Bechor the Kohen and Bechor the Nachala, and then it retracted and the other baby came out afterwards, that baby that comes afterwards, the twin that comes afterwards, would have no Bechor. It would not be a Bechor the Nachla, not be a Bechor the Kohen. That din is essential, because if you wrote Rosho Virubo in that scenario, then you would think only when Rosho Virubo of the mate comes out, is it a Bechor the Kohen and not a Bechor the Nachla. But if it came out Chai, then it would be a Bechor the Kohen and Bechor the Nachla. But that would mean when it came out chai, you need both a rosho v'rubo, which is not true. Rosho is enough in that scenario. So the diuk that we're making out of that statement forces you to say it's speaking about a rosho. So according to Shmuel, it'll actually turn out that in both scenarios in the Mishnah, it really should say rosho v'rubo. The only reason it doesn't say rosho v'rubo is because of the diuk, which is, even though, again, the first scenario where it's a nefel, it should only be rosho v'rubo in order to be deemed a birth. And in the next scenario where it's mate, that's also a nefel, and that situation also should be rosho v'rubo according to Shmuel. So both of those scenarios in the Mishnah should have been rosho v'rubo. The only reason we don't write rosho v'rubo is because of the diuk you want to make out of that seifa case, out of the case where it's 9 months, it's kalu lo chadashav, it reached full term, and it comes out rosho mate. And then you would have been midayek, rosho chai is different. So there we want you to be midayek that rosho chai is different, and not rosho v'rubo chai is different. So for that diuk, the Mishnah writes rosho, even though both of the scenarios in the Mishnah should have been rosho v'rubo according to Shmuel. It doesn't do that because then you'd get the wrong deal. And you would say that Rosh Rubu Chai came out, then would be a Bechor L'Nachla, Bechor L'Kohen, and ruin it totally for the other entity. But that's not true. You don't need Rosh Rubu when it's Chai. You only need Rosho. So the Gemara says, okay, my Kamash Malan. So then, what din are you teaching me? You're teaching me this din, the Kevin, the Mepik Le Reshe Havaledo. You're teaching me that if a head comes out by a full-term baby and it's alive, that's deemed to be a Leida. Tanina, we have an explicit Mishnah that covers this. Hotzi Rusho, Afo Birshik Zero, if he stuck his head out, even though he pulled it back, Arizeki Yulod. That's as if the baby's born. That's dealing with a Ben Pekua, where the baby or the fetus is inside the mother. Does the Shechit of the mother cover the fetus that's inside? So in this scenario, if it sticks its head out while it's a full-term fetus, and it sticks its head out and then pulls it back in and then you Shech the mother, that baby is not covered by the shechita of the mother because it's considered to be born. So you see there that the head is the determining factor. V'chita imash meinun behema. If you're going to tell me, well, that's about an animal. V'kamash malan be'adam. And our Mishnah here is teaching you about an adam. Da'adam be'ema lo yalif. Because you can't extrapolate a person or birth of a person from a be'ema. Delayt la pruzdor. Because there they don't have, normally the word pruzdor is used to reference to a birth canal. And Tosavot already points this out, that everywhere else in the Gemara, when it uses the term pruzdor, it means the birth canal. And that's just not true. Both animals and human beings have a birth canal. So that can't be the distinction that the Gemara is drawing over here. But rather, the pruzdor, as Rashi explains over here, is the difference between a birth of an animal and a birth of a human being. By birth of a human being, even though the fetus has already exited the birth canal, doesn't mean that the baby is necessarily visible because of the thighs of the woman. The woman's legs or thighs, where the birthing takes place between, block the visibility to the fetus that is exiting. By an animal, that's not the case. The way that the animals birth, they birth in such a manner that as soon as it exits the birth canal, the baby or the fetus is visible. And that's the distinction over here. And Tosafot says that you have to understand here that the Lashon HaPruzdor, even though they're using the same word, it means different things in different places. It says, "Vein tema alashon shaveh, vein perusham shaveh." Don't worry about the fact that sometimes the same term is used and it means different things. He says that that's not unusual, or that's not something that is impossible to have. And therefore, what it means over here is that by a animal, you might assume that the head coming out is a birth, because immediately of the head exiting the birth canal, it's visible. And that's what makes it a birth. By a human being, maybe the head coming out is not enough, because even after it's exited the birth canal, it's still not visible. It's still not easily seen, and maybe that's not deemed a birth. So therefore, what's a din by Behema might not be the din by Adam. And therefore, you have the Mishnah in Chulin, it's talking about a Behema. Our Mishnah over here is telling you about an Adam. Behema me Adam. And you can't learn Behema from our Mishnah, which is talking about Adam, lo yafa mishum dechashi partzuf panim didei. Because by human beings, the face is a essential element, as we saw before, and we're going to see later on, that the face is very essential by human beings. Since the face is so essential, maybe that's why the head is deemed a birth. But by Behema, where that's not the case, maybe it wouldn't have been deemed a birth, and that's why I need two Mishnayot, the Mishnah in Chulin for Behema, the Mishnah over here in Bechorot for Adam. Gemara says, ha nami tanino. What are you talking about? We have a Mishnah explicitly in Nida that says the same thing, which is Yatzake Darko. If a baby comes out in the normal fashion, which means head first, Mishiyatza Rov Rosho. Once a robe of the head is exited, Vezu Rov Rosho, Mishiteitze Padachto. Once the forehead is exited, that's considered a birth. So we have an explicit Mishnah that says that birthing by an animal in Chulin and birthing by a human being in the Mishnah Nida are both determined by the head coming out. So then why do I need a Mishnah here to be worried about a diuk about whether the head coming out is considered to be birth? And you're going to now write a Mishnah that doesn't have information that it should have essential information like Rosho V'Rubo to teach you a diuk, which we already know from another Mishnah. That doesn't make any sense. Tiyufta de Shmuel Tiyufta. That's a strong refutation of this position of Shmuel, which is that the Mishnah should have written Rosho V'Rubo by the Reisha and the Sefer, or the case of the Nefel, by the case of the Ben Tisha mate. It should have written Rosho V'Rubo, because according to Shmuel, that's the only time it's considered to be a birth. It didn't do that in order to teach you the diuk that it's only Ben Tisha mate, that Rosho is not enough. But if it was a Ben Tisha Chai, Rosho would have been enough. That's an explicit Mishnah in Nida. I don't need that diuk. And therefore, the Mishnah to go and say something that's not true over here just for a diuk that we know from another Mishnah doesn't make sense. If the Mishnah meant Rosho V'Rubo, it should have written Rosho V'Rubo. And that's why it's a strong refutation of Shmuel's position. Right, so now the Gemara continues and says, Amar Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Padachat Poteret B'chol Makom. A padachat is considered to be a birth in all places, chutz min ha-nachala, with the exception of when it comes to nachala. My daimo. What's the reasoning behind Reish Lakish's position? Because the pasuk says in Parshat Ki Teitze, yakir lo letet lo pishnayim, that the father has to recognize or acknowledge him in order for it to be a bechor. Now, traditionally, in the Gemara, yakir is the father's capacity are actually right to say that this is the Bechor. In that if a father shows up in a new place and we don't know anything about his family and he says this is the firstborn, he's the one that's able to do that because he's empowered by through Yakir Lo. He's the one who can recognize, he's the one that can determine for us which one is the Bechor Lenachala. So that's the traditional way that they darshan that pasuk. Over here it means something a little different, which is that Yakir, it has to be recognizable to the father. The fetus that has exited has to be recognizable for the father in order to be a Bechor Lenachala. And that's what Reish Lakish is saying. That even though Padachat, a forehead, is sufficient in terms of Rov Rosho to be determined a birth in other scenarios or other situations, nevertheless, with regards to Nachala, you need more than that. You need Hakara. You need recognition by the father of the fetus. And according to Reish Lakish, Padachat is not sufficient recognition. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Afilu the Nachala. Rabbi Yochanan says, even by Nachala, it's enough Padachat. In essence, Rabbi Yochanan thinks that the din of Bechor the Nachala is the same as all the other halachot. But it's not exactly the same because he does agree that you do need Yakir with regards to the Bechor the Nachala. The nafkamina between them will actually be whether Rubo Kukula works. By all other issues of birth where the padachat suffices, Rubo Kukula will work. Over here, Yakir means you need the full padachat to exit according to Rabbi Yochanan. And therefore, even according to Rabbi Yochanan, there's a difference between Bechor Lenachla and other areas of halacha of birth, even though they both are governed by the issue of padachat, but the din of Rubo Kukula will apply in these other locations or other issues. Whereas by Bechor Lenachala, you will have to have the full padachat to exit in order to classify it as being Yakir, even according to Rabbi Yochanan. Bechol makom l'toye mai. When Reish Lakish says over here, everywhere else, it has a din of birth, what are you coming to include? L'toye hai d'tanu rabbanan. This comes to include a scenario like this. Gioret, shiatza padachat ve'vlada biota nachrit. A situation in which a woman was still non-Jewish, and the baby's forehead exited. Then the baby went back in utero, and then the woman converts, and then she gives birth fully once she's already Jewish. Now, as far as a Jewish woman who gives birth, is subject to korban leida, tumat leida. She has, if it's a male, 7 days of tuma, 33 days of dam tor. If it's a female, 14 days of dam tumea, and then 66 days of dam tor. So all of those only apply to a Jewish woman. Over here, if it was a non-Jewish woman who gave birth, none of this would have any application. So here, the situation is that the woman partially gave birth while she was not Jewish, and then fully gives birth after she is Jewish. So the mikol makom means even in this scenario where the padachat came out while she was not Jewish, and then retracted inside, went back in utero, and then was born later, this woman has no din, not yemei tara, not yemei tuma, not korban leida, because we deemed the birth to have been taken place when she was not Jewish. That was a full birth at the time the padachat exited. What happens now is just the finishing of the birth. But the real birth took place way beforehand. And for that reason now, none of these dinim apply. So that's what it means, mikol makom. Meiteve. So now we're going to challenge this view in this machlok with Din Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan Yakir. Zu akarat panim. That's the recognition of the face. Bezu akarat panim. What's the recognition of the face? Patsuf panim imachotam. It means the face with the nose. So according to that, it sounds like Reish Lakish is right, that the padachat, the forehead, is not enough to be deemed a birth, because for recognition, you need a patsuf panim imachotam. You need the face with the nose. The nose is an essential factor for recognition of an individual. And therefore, without the nose, you don't have hakarat panim. Rabbi Yochanan is going to say, tnei adachotam. Don't read it that you need hakarat panim, partsuf panim, imachotam. It really means adachotam. You need the face to be visible until the nose, not including the nose. And if you read it that way, then it's not a stira for Rabbi Yochanan. Tashma. Einam edim ela al partsuf panim imachotam. It's dealing with a husband who passed away, and they're trying to give testimony to free the woman from being an aguna. So you can only testify about the individual that you saw, that was the husband, if you saw the face of the individual. And seeing the face in order to have hakara means the face with the nose. So you see there that the hakara is dependent on the nose again. So today, once again, Rabbi Yochanan says, imended to read, adachotam, until the nose. Not with the nose, but until the nose. Tashma, padachat, below partsuf panim below padachat, ein meidim, ajeshnehem, imachotam. So now already you have a much more difficult scenario for Rabbi Yochanan over here, because here it says, if you have the forehead without the face without the forehead, ein meidim, you can't testify, ajeshnehem, imachotam, unless you have both of them with the nose. So therefore you see that the nose is an essential factor over here, and the padachat alone does not give you hakara. Amar Abaye, v'itei merav kana, maikra. What's the pasuk that proves that? Because it says, hakarat pnehem anta bam, that the recognition of their face answers them or proves them. Rashi over here says that the pashtei dekra, the pasuk speaking about a noafim, people who are having adulterous relationships, they're having relationships that are illicit. So the face of the ubar, the face of the child that is born, indicates or reveals the secret. Since the child looks like the father, and the father is not the husband, then it's very clear that the child is not the child of the father, but rather the child of this adultering individual that had a illicit relationship with this woman. So that's the Pashtura Pasuk. But what you see from this is, Hakarat Pneim Antabam, that the appearance of the face is like an Edut, meaning that the face or the facial features, the recognition of the face testifies as to who the individual is. And similarly over here, the ability to see the face of the individual is determinant in deciding whether you really know who the person is or you don't know the person is. But you see from there that determination is Hakarat Panim includes Chotam, includes the nose. And that's problematic for Rabbi Yochanan. The first answer to the Gemara is Shaini Edut Isha. By Edut Isha, it's different. Dachmiru Barabonon. That this is only a Chumra Midrabanan. Mido Raito Enochanami. Padachat is sufficient. Sufficient by the birth of a baby. Sufficient by the recognition of an individual to free the woman from being an aguna. Padachat would have been enough. But the Rabbanan were Machmir. Umi Achmiru? Were they really Machmir? Vatanan. We have a Mishnah. We're very makil when it comes to naguna, that we allow even hearsay, a aid from another aid, from a woman or an evet or a shivcha who are normally disqualified from edut. All those are qualified to give edut isha to free this woman from being an aguna. So you see, they were makil by aguna. How can you say they're being machmer? Gemara says, ki ikilu rabbanan b'selfa b'tchilata lo yakilu rabbanan. The Gemara says this in a number of places, which is that rabbanan created a balance between areas where they were makil by aguna and areas where they were machmer. They're makil with regards to who can testify, what type of testimony is accepted. There they were very lenient. On the other hand, in terms of recognition, and even afterwards, the penalties that will be assigned if it's wrong, both of those the Chachamim were very machmir by, in order to make sure that people who are testifying really know what they're speaking about and really understand the ramifications of what they're saying. So that's what he's suggesting over here. That in terms of recognition, midrabanan, they rate a higher standard than normal because they're being makil by who can testify. So since they lowered the standard of who can testify, they upped the standard of what recognition is considered over here. But it's unique to Edut Isha that the Chachamim imposed additional requirements of not just padachat, but the chutam as well. Although the Rabbeinu Gershom has a very interesting understanding here of Tekilata and Sofa, where he says that Sofa is a case where they know for sure that the husband died, and they just need someone to come and testify to that fact, but they know that information. In that situation, Ekiluba, they were very makil, and they allowed this type of testimony to take place. If it was Bitchilata, where they don't have the information about the fact that he's dead, then the Chachamim were not makil in that case, and they require a much higher standard of recognition. So that's what he says, Ki'ikilu b'sofa heichid yodei devadai muteret, that they already know she's muteret to kachazo demeit. They see that he's already passed away. B'tchila is heichid lo chazo demeit. They didn't see that he was dead or passed away. Ule avs hudei alei. Now they're coming to testify who k'dei latira. That's what's going to be matir over here. They're lo sagi ala patsuf panim imachotam. In that case, we need a much higher standard of recognition. So he says, tchila and sofa has to do with the Beit Din's knowledge or evidence that's needed in this case. They already know he's dead, so the evidence they need is a much lower threshold of evidence. In that case, we don't require such high levels of recognition. In cases where they don't know that he's passed away, then we need a much higher level of recognition. And that's what he says is the difference between sofa and tchila. Not in a similar case or in the same scenario, but different cases rather than the way that we explained it. Another answer that's given is yakir lachud, bakarat panim lachud. You're dealing with two different issues. One is yakir, which is the requirement by nachala, and the other one is hakarat panim, which is the necessity by edut isha. Hakarat panim is much different than yakir. Yakir padachat is sufficient, according to Rabbi Yochanan, whereas by edut isha, where you need hakarat panim, there the standard is much higher, because hakarat panim antabam. In order to have edut to identify the individual, there you need full hakarat panim, which is something that is above normal hakara. And that's why you require a chotam. According to this answer, midoraita, in a Torah, you need hakarat panim, you need the chotam. It's not just midorabanan. Midoraita, you require that, because that's the requirement of hakarat panim. Whereas by nachala, it's only yakir, and not yakir panav. And since that's yakir, Rabbi Yochanan says, padachat is a sufficient recognition over there, and there'll be a difference between hakarat panim and hakara. Midoraita will be such a distinction, as opposed to the first answer, where it's only a difference midorabanan. Midoraita, it's all padachat. Just me, the Rabbanan, they were machmir. Over here, it's a dindoraita that edut isha has a higher standard or threshold than regular yakir, which is nachala. And that's the difference, and that's how Rabbi Yochanan will explain this phenomenon by edut isha and not be a stira to his position with regards to nachala. Okay, we're going to stop here by the top line of Vem Zayin Amud Aleph.